Well, Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnellogue, was also at that meeting. Yesterday morning, I sat down for an interview with him. At the heart of all of this is the EPA's interim water quality report that was published a few weeks ago, with the Irish Farmers Association describing this as fundamentally flawed, and some politicians and commentators seriously questioning the validity of their science. I began by asking the minister whether he stands behind the EPA scientists and their data.
Listen, it's important to acknowledge, and while we have to do more in relation to our water quality, and it's a really important and key priority for me, myself, and for farmers and for the wider public, it's also important to acknowledge that in a European context, our water quality is very good compared to other European member states. We're number two or number three in relation to the quality of our water courses, and they've been quite stable, you know, over the last number of years as well. But we do have a derogation at European level in terms of the amount of organic nutrients or slurry we're able to spread in our land. Across Europe, the maximum that can be spread is 170 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare. In Ireland, we have a derogation from that norm to be able to spread at 250. But that derogation is dependent on us continuing to improve water quality. So that data that was collected by the EPA was done at the request of the Commission.
And you stand behind that data? That's the important part of this question. Do you stand behind what the EPA are saying?
The EPA have produced a report which the Commission have asked them to do. There's many other reports that the EPA would do as well, which would provide a much broader range of information. But this particular report is one that the Commission have asked for as part of our midterm review of the derogation. And I suppose the challenge now and the meeting we had at McCandless Farm last night was about the discussion around how we can maintain that 250 and the possibility of that, because the data, going by the data at the moment, it would show that as of the 1st of January this year, we would have to drop from 250 kilo of organic nitrogen spread per hectare to 220. And obviously that presents a real challenge for the sector.
Some farmers, particularly dairy farmers, are extremely concerned about the prospect of reducing cow numbers. And what they want is very clear. They want the stocking rates to remain, and they want more time to implement the measures which have been put in place to stop nutrients from polluting our waters. The big question for you that they want answered is, will they be given that time?
Well, that will be a decision of other European member states. As it stands under the derogation we have, which we negotiated in early 2022 and runs up to 2025, that midterm review at the moment indicates, based on the water quality data, that we would have to reduce our maximum stocking rate to 220. So in order to not have to apply that 220, we would need to be granted further flexibility by the Commission.
Will you be asking for that?
I will be, and I have already engaged and asked my team to engage. I've also asked all the farm representative organisations to feed into me their ideas as to how we can put the best and strongest case possible to the Commission. And I'll work closely with farm representatives across the country now to try and put a strong case to seek flexibility to maintain that 250. But it is a matter for the Commission and for other member states. And we're one of only three member states across the 27 at the moment that are allowed to farm at higher than 170. And we're actually the highest. We currently are able to do it at 250. Denmark, for example, can do it to 230. So it's at other member states' enjoyment that we have that derogation. So I will work with our farmers now to put a case for more time. But the key thing we're all accepting as well, and we all have to work on, is that we have to improve water quality over the next few years, because to keep that derogation and to have it post 2025, all the indicators have to be going in the right direction, and we have to work very hard to achieve that.
And just briefly, it is my understanding that the Commission last year, when you were negotiating this, actually wanted a lot lower than 220. What was it that they wanted?
Well, they certainly wanted lower than that, and I'm not going to go into where the negotiations were, but where it finished up was 220. A lot of member states who previously had a derogation have lost it, don't have it anymore. It's not been granted any longer by other member states. So we have a very unique model here in Ireland. It's grass-based. We have a longer growing season. And also our rainfall, and that means that nutrients can get utilised by the soil more readily than in other countries too. So we have good reasons to look to maintain our derogation. But really importantly, we have to be continuing to improve water quality. And that's why I've put together a commitment committee in the last few months of all farm representatives, stakeholders and wider stakeholders as well, to work together to improve our water quality. Because listen, it's really important to me, it's really important to the public that we have the best water quality that we possibly can have. It's good that we're at the top tier at European level, but we have to improve in that further, and I'm very committed to working with farmers to do that. And farmers, really importantly, are massively committed to doing this too.
The vast majority of people in Ireland aren't farmers, and some of them have noticed the escalating water pollution in their local rivers, streams and lakes and estuaries. They've formed groups, they've come together as rivers trusts to try and address it. They've listened to the EPA. The EPA are telling them that the major pressure is agriculture. And they hear farmers saying they don't want to reduce stocking rates, and they hear the farm organisations saying that too. What do you have to say to the general public who want to see not only action, but rapid action to address water pollution?
Well, I mean, the general public are right, and farmers agree with them as well. Farmers want to improve water quality. And it's not just the agricultural aspects of it, because we've wastewater coming from from urban centres as well, which contribute to that, mainly from on the phosphorus side, coming from urban wastewater. But the nitrates challenge in water mainly comes from agriculture. And across agriculture, we have to work to make sure we manage that very effectively, and that in terms of how we farm, we're doing it in a way that is in sync with the environment around us, and that water quality is utmost in how we farm as well. And we've learned a lot over the last number of years. We've learned a lot over the last generation, for example, in relation to the impact of agriculture and the importance of how we do agriculture in relation to how it works with the environment around us. It was that undoubtedly that sense over generations that, listen, nature was strong, nature was robust, that we, in terms of how we live our daily lives, in terms of how we run our towns and our cities, in terms of how we run our households, and in terms of how we run our farms, that nature would respond and could get on with itself. But that's not the reality. Nature is very fragile. We've learned that, and it's not just a case in Ireland. It's across the world. We have seen a reduction in biodiversity. We have seen impact on ecosystems. And we know full well now that everything we do has an impact on nature around us. So we have to be very careful about that, and very much so as well in relation to agricultural production. And farmers are really aware of that. And it's my work and my job to work with them to continue that journey and to make real progress in relation to improving water quality. The case is that we're doing massive work, which we're confident will deliver progress, and we're looking for the flexibility to be and the space to be able to allow that to show results.
I mean, Teagasc research has shown that small suckler farms emit fewer greenhouse gas emissions, have lower nitrogen and phosphorus balance, are more nature rich than large intensive farms. They may not produce as much food, but they are on the cusp now, are they not, of actually benefiting significantly from new green policies at EU level. And as you say yourself, you have given more funding towards some of the subsidies they get. This will finally make them potentially more profitable. And we have people like the hugely respected Dr. Brendan Dunford in Clare stating, after 20 years evidence in the Burren, that we need agriculture and farmers to maintain biodiversity and nature. Is it not absolutely vital for the future of the suckler farmers and the rural economy where they live that they stay farming and they take advantage of this change now?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I want to see happening. And that's what the schemes that I'm putting in place, that the objective of those are, is. My objective is, whether farmers full-time or part-time, that we make it worth their time and worth their while to actually farm, and that we reward them for the work that they're doing.
Last week at the IFA rally in Kilkenny, a dairy farmer said to me, there were lots of smart lads who told us to go on and go on and do this. And now somebody has said there's a problem and nobody is taking responsibility. We are the ones being hammered for it. And he's talking about the expansion, and all roads in many ways lead back to Food Harvest 2020 that was developed in 2010. And farmers were told back then, you know, the shackles are off. They say they were told that they were assured it was green, it was sustainable, that they would be supported by the Origin Green strategy. And now they find themselves here. The shackles are firmly back on now. I just wonder, when you look back, do you think that farmers and the general public were failed by this policy? And somebody needs to be held accountable for it.
No, certainly not. I mean, what has happened the last number of years has been massively beneficial on so many fronts. We are now producing, and the biggest change has been that we've seen more dairy production happen in the country. That was restricted, and it's very rare in, you know, in any sector of the economy that you actually stop something from happening. That had been stopped from happening from the early 80s. What's happened now is that some farmers who had more capacity are producing more, but also we've seen farmers who would have wanted to go into dairying over that last 30 years and who couldn't actually go into it. What's coming out of that? They're producing top class quality milk. It's a wonderful product. I tweeted there yesterday, actually, I saw in the new Barbie movie, a picture of Barbie with cow's milk on the table in front of her. It's a great, great product. It's so nutritious. And we produce it in this place, in this country here, in a way that is world-leading in terms of sustainability.
I think people agree to that. But the question isn't that. The question is, farmers now find themselves in debt, facing the shackles of nitrate quota, and also land quota, because they say they can't get land. Well, so my question is, looking back, that policy promised something that it has not delivered.
It's always the case that in terms of how we do agriculture, we have to be cognizant and work with the environment around us. The derogation to be able to spread more nutrients per hectare of land is something that's set at European level. And for the last number of years, we've had a derogation from that. There was 5, 6, 7 countries had it. It's now down to 3. That risk factor has always been there because it's always at the consent of other member states that we get to have that. We're going to work hard to make sure we keep it. But the way we'll keep it is actually by improving water quality and pushing on in relation to making water quality even better.
I'm basing this next question on the assumption that you agree that chemical fertiliser use has to drop. Yeah. And you're nodding your head there. The latest figures from the EPA were very positive for farmers in that the emissions from agriculture are down year on year by 1.2%. Yeah. That's the right direction, driven by a 14% reduction in fertiliser use. The head of Chagas, Franco Mara, was in with us and he told me that the Ukraine war and the increased price of fertiliser was a big driver in this. Now, certain goods have a zero rate of VAT applied, sanitary products, kids' clothing, disability aids, all the rest. But within that is fertiliser. Surely, if there's one takeaway from the success of the latest emissions reductions by Irish farmers, is that making fertiliser expensive works. Do you think it is justifiable now and into the future that fertiliser has a 0% VAT applied?
I think what we need to do is, fertiliser is already massively expensive compared to other types of other ways that you can grow grass. And the great thing is we have now seed research over the last short number of years, the other great alternative ways of actually growing grass. Through the adoption of clover, through multi-species sward, for example, and also through soil fertility and managing that and soil testing and also soil liming. I've put in place a multi-species sward scheme this year, which has a strong uptake from farmers. I also launched the liming scheme this year, which with almost 50,000 family farms across the country applied for. So, and there's a big shift underway, which I'm going to keep pushing and keep promoting, which will be able to move us away from chemical fertilizer, using those more natural ways of actually fixing nutrients and nitrogen from the air through the right plants into the ground, not doing it chemically.
But should it be 0% fat?
And also as well how we utilise slurry and organic fertiliser and nitrogen in an effective way. So I don't see that as being something that will actually make the change here. The change is already underway. The economics already point in that direction very strongly. It's about actually working with farmers to drive on with that journey.
Two quick questions. You're responsible for the makeup in many ways of the Chagask board. I asked the head of Chagask about the fact that 5 of the 11 members are dairy farmers and that the head of a company that sells commodity fertiliser is also on the board. Do you think that serves the public interest, given that 75% of the funding from Chagask comes from the public?
I think the structure of the Chagas board was well thought out and is representative of it. It's a small board, and I think that is good by corporate governance standards, 11. It's a mixture of representatives from some farm stakeholders and also those that come through the public appointment service as well and appointed through that. It so happens at the moment, I know, and it's been raised with me a number of farmers, that the farm organisations themselves, it tends to be some dairy farming at the moment, but they are there to represent all within their organisation, but also to represent the agriculture sector generally and the good of the agri-food sector.
So the head of a company that sells fertilizer.
So, through the public appointment service, people can come forward and can apply. And you need a range of skills and understandings and expertise. We have a very good system in the country for actually how we actually try and distill that. And it's important that we have people serving. And it's important people are serving then that they're doing it for the good of the sector. And I'm very confident that the Chagas board are doing that and serving us very well.
Final question. Your budget in the department, as I understand it, is 2.1 billion euro that you're in charge of. Mm-hmm. And that money comes from the public. At last night's meeting, a member of the IFA's National Committee said to you, you are the custodian of this industry. Is that how you see your role as the minister, or do you see your role as serving a much greater public interest here?
I think farmers serve the public interest and perform a massively important role, not just in relation to food production, but in relation to how we manage our environment and in relation to how we lead out in terms of, you know, tackling the biodiversity challenges we have. And I see it as my role to work with them to make sure that they're well paid and fully respected in relation to the work that they carry out, and to lead farming in a way that produces food, really, really importantly, safe, nutritious, but also leads in relation to the other challenges we have and the other leadership roles that we can have, and that serves the public. But in serving the public, that farmers are respected and that family farm incomes are core to that.
But the public interest in terms of the 2.1 billion euro of their money that is flowing through the industry...
Yeah. That is there to serve the public, and it serves the public very well. Farmers perform a really, really important service to the public, and their role is going to be even more important in the years ahead.
Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnellogue, talking to me in Donegal yesterday.